Yeah. 5 seconds of summer and boy band on Radio 3 for a Tuesday. A bit of top loader before that from 1999. At this time of the week, every week, go over to Aussie, Melbourne, say hi to our friend, business futurist Maurice Misalowski. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, happy Tuesday, everyone. I'm wonderful, thank you.
Happy Tuesday to you too, Maurice. Now, I'm thinking a lot of our chats are very ideas-driven. We don't really know where we're going until we get there. But I thought what we'd do today is talk about stuff that you think might actually materialise by the end of this year that we haven't got yet. And every time you say, aye, I've got a little shot glass in front of me, so I'll put that to use.
I hope we've got lots of things to put in it, because we're going to use that quite a bit.
Yeah, of course we are. Go on. Where would you, the end of this year, something we can almost hold in our hands.
Well, if we're talking the end of this year, it's got to be something that's almost there. Yeah, because we're not going to really invent anything and bring it to market straight away. So really we're talking about things that are quietly on the horizon somewhere, or maybe things we've talked about before. So there's a whole lot of stuff. Do you want to start with a little tipple now? We'll just use the I word, the ending, the AI thing now.
Yeah, well, it's on the list, isn't it? So you might as well.
Yeah, let's start with that and see where it takes us. So one of the first things this year I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot more about what's tentatively called emotion-sensitive AI.
Okay.
We've seen lots over the last 3 years where AI, we type a few words or we talk to it and it tries to figure out who we are and it gives us something that seems mildly or wildly intelligent. Mm. But what AI is pushing into now is this really interesting realm. You and I, humans, will call it emotions, but it's trying to figure out really what's our intent. What is it that we're really asking, feeling or thinking about when we're interacting with them? Okay. And there are a whole lot of new systems, a whole lot of new bots, a whole lot of new writing, and thoughts about how we get these things to go down a couple of levels into what we might think is the emotional state. Mm. And that's one of the big things for this year.
Now, I don't know how much of a TV addict you are or, streaming addict or whatever. A lot of dramas these days, or some dramas these days, the topics tend to be, kids who've got into crisis and done really crazy stuff because they've turned their AI chatbot into a friend. And obviously by giving these things more emotion, that could feed this, surely.
It can, but we're not necessarily talking about giving it more emotion, although you're right, that's one side of it. We're really talking about things like this. If I put it into context, we've talked a lot about education and artificial intelligence and how it might be able to be used as a tutor, not instead of a teacher, but as well as a teacher.
Yeah.
So for me, this emotional sensitive AI understands the child that it's tutoring. In whatever language, whatever, maths, whatever it's doing with it. But it knows enough not to keep spitting information at it. But for whatever reason, because of the way the child's interacting, because of the way it's typing or talking, it slows down. It says, look, Maurice, it doesn't say it, but it knows. Maurice is having a hard time with this. I better circle back. I better just take it easy. Maybe I put a joke in here or maybe I just lighten up the way that I teach this type of thing. So it's playing that kind of an emotional roller coaster, so to speak, with the person that is at the other end.
So it's doing what it does, but it's just being a bit more, and again in quotes, sensitive about it. Or responsive.
And again, it's hard to find that word because it's not a human thing, so I don't know what we call it. But yeah, there's technology that sits in cars where it tells us, that we might be going into a laneway and and we shouldn't. Or there's a car in front and we might have to hit the brakes. It's all this automatic stuff that we have in cars. But can you imagine? And lots of car dealers have been working on this for decades or so, but a car that actually understands the driver and the fatigue at that moment. So what it's doing is it's really interpreting if you're slouching in your seat or if you're not sitting the way you normally do or if your eyes are not where they need to be, all of those types of things. It's emotionally trying to gauge where you're at on the road and maybe dialing up its assistance or dialing it down the other way, because if you're really attentive and you're on the road and you're really you're participating and you know exactly what's happening in front of you, it might take off some of those hindrances because it knows at that moment you don't need them. So it's doing this constant dance.
So it's going to be responding more appropriately, if that's...
We're hoping so. And that really is where this artificial intelligence sensitivity type approach is. Let's just stop one size fits all. Let's actually understand the human behind the keyboard, behind the mic, whatever it is that you're using interface with, and let's see if we can understand them and provide them with what they need in a way that's just right for just that second.
That probably will happen. I mean, but that'd be very interesting. And you can feel that they're growing all the time. How about we talk about something you can take out of a box?
Yeah. So what are we taking out of a box? Something like a brain-computer interface, a little headset that we can put on?
Why not?
Why not? And you can actually buy them and you can take them out of the box. So it's called BCI because it sounds so much better, but it's a brain-computer interface, which sounds like nothing anyway.
Yeah.
But think of a normal headset, something we might buy when we're going on a motorbike or when we're going on a bike or similar. We put this thing on, but it's not as bulky. You know, it's not necessarily doesn't have all the structure because it doesn't need it for safety. But what it does is it sits neatly on the skull and it has pads on it. And each of those pads correlates to somewhere in the brain. And from that, it's taking readings from the brain. Or, strangely enough, it's actually sending information into the brain. So these brain-computer interfaces have been around for a while. Mostly they've been used for people with limited abilities. So, for instance, you might have somebody that sits in a wheelchair but has limited capacity with their arms to be able to move that around. So what they might be able to do, and what they can do actually, I shouldn't say might because these are available, just very, very costly, is that they can think the chair forwards or sideways or wherever they want to go. They can think the door open. They can type. So again, by thinking, they can make noises. They can speak if they're not able to use their own voice. These things, you work through brain-computer interfaces. They have been specifically made for that user so that she or he is able to use their thoughts to be able to move their wheelchair, open the door, type something, say something.
Again, sci-fi movie stuff. It always is.
Yeah, yeah,
isn't it?
but absolutely 100% doable. There's some really good out of the box solutions now for people with MS, for people with Parkinson's, and we're talking primarily for people again who aren't able to move, who have lost the ability to use their voice, but still inside literally are screaming to get out. I mean, they have the capacity, absolutely, just not the ability. So these brain-computer faces are really getting very, very good, very, very easy to use. They used to be difficult to train because you can imagine how difficult it might be to be able to get a brain thought, something we've never really thought a lot about, but a brain thought, and translate it into an action.
It's incredible, actually.
which then a machine has to be able to understand, and not only that, but instantaneously be able to do it. So you have to be able to think, turn right, and the machine has to be able to understand that's your thought and actually do it safely.
And that's where we need the first thing you talked about today.
Yeah. So these things are all getting better and better, and it is because of that, time to drink again, artificial intelligence, because it just helps to speed it up a little bit. It helps to build that bridge between the human and the piece of technology really well.
Today, we are talking about things that Morris and publications all over the web, of course, think might be a reality by the end of the year. And I think the first two do tie in really nicely to do with medical needs, elderly, people with disabilities, etc. That's a brilliant avenue to go down. That again, could quite possibly, you know, how would it happen by the end of this year?
Well, they are around. So I'm kind of fibbing because both of those things are around. I said they're very high-end, they're very expensive, and they are really for those that can afford calling a spade. But what we will see by the end of this year is most things are, and not just this year, but ongoing now, because the technology is now mostly proven, because artificial intelligence does help to keep the price down, these little, you know, it's not that expensive anymore to get the internals working.
Not prohibitive.
What we will see now is that it has become more and more ordinary, more available, and that's in the higher end, you know, when we talked about the brain-computer interfaces. But when we talk about the emotion sensitive, we're really just talking about often the way that they will write the code, the way that it will present itself, and that's relatively easy and quick to implement once we figure out how to do it, and they have. So I'm really sure that by the end of this year, next year, we won't even know it's doing it to us. Yeah. It'll just be part of the natural way that we feel about technology. And can I give you an example that kind of says how used to things we are already? When we talk about our mobile phone, and most of us will have one, we know that that has a glass or whatever it has on the front section, and when we press on it, it does something. But what we actually feel, if we stop and think about it, is we actually think that we're pressing a button. Yeah, it actually feels like the glass is indented or that the glass has moved. All of these things are exactly what I'm talking about. The technology works so smoothly and we take it so much for granted, but it in fact isn't doing physically what we think it is, but emotionally it is. And that's what we're talking about with these devices. It's just become so natural, so obvious and so easy to use that we just assume they have these abilities when really they don't.
You know what? I reckon I'd a little bit more understand about the brain interface, because a haptic fools the brain, doesn't it? It really does. Even you know you're being fooled when a haptic buzzes on your finger, it feels like the real deal.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're not going to sit there and say this isn't real. And haptic means that there's some, you know, some piece of machinery that's doing something that moves or jolts or do something to fool us into believing it's actually moving when it's not.
Mm.
And you're absolutely right. That's a great example of all of this. And that's what we want technology to be. At the end of the day, if it's not easy, if it's not intuitive, then why do we want it?
Okay. I was reading about one more that's medical, and it sounds like it's pie in the sky, but what do you think? Organ bioprinting.
Yeah, done deal.
Is it?
Done deal.
Go on, then.
Yeah, yeah, it's been worked on for decades and decades. It's been talked about forever. I mean, you can go back into sci-fi 100 years or so ago, and all the movies where they pretended to do it. Frankenstein was a great example of this. So bioprinting as a novel, I'm talking about, not as an end result of being able to do it. But what we're talking about here is being able to bioprint, in other words, to actually print a new kidney or a heart or any other body organ. I know it sounds incredible, but we're already doing it in small order. So these are not all of the, you know, these are not all our body parts. We can't yet print ourselves a new heart or whatever else. But we are already starting to play with kidneys. We're starting to play with some other elements as well. These are not going to be available in any hospital for use in the next couple of years, maybe longer than that. But absolutely, the researchers that I've been involved with and I've seen are working on it. There are often what is referred to as a miniature version of it, which is that they have been able to create cells basically out of nothing, human cells, and been able to grow them. Again, there's a whole lot of efficacy and ethics around doing this. You can't just grow a heart from nothing. I mean, there's all these, as there should be, all these ethical considerations, all these needs and concerns. So creating it isn't as easy as it sounds by doing it. The technology to do it, I think, is actually there. It's just, how do we grow it? How do we maintain it? What does this look like? Who has access to it? Can you imagine what the cost of these things might be? Who decides who gets this heart? Who decides who prints a new piece of, you know, body or whatever? But we will be able to do it 100%, not for all of our body parts, but I'm really convinced 50, 60 years from now, it will just seem an ordinary thing for us to do.
Should this one not really be on our list today, or should it?
Most probably not for everyday use, but we, again, are starting to see more and more examples of these things, and it's in the everyday press as well that some researcher or some hospital has started to use these technologies. So I think it belongs on our list. It just shouldn't be the end of everything by this year. It's just not going to be that far advanced.
All right, then, let's go to bricks and mortar. Well, actually, power sources. Now, that's got to be something that we might see some tangible evidence of.
Yeah. So energy, of course, is one of those big things around the planet. I mean, how do we get all of our growing population to have enough energy to be able to have the lights, to be able to cook, to be able to move, do all the things they want?
Mm.
And also, of course, to do that in a way that doesn't cause more harm to our ecology. So we're starting to see all sorts of things around that, because, again, there's a huge need for it. Money is always a good driver for this.
Yeah.
We're starting to see things again. This is time to drink. The AI-driven power grids is definitely on the horizon and will just become an ordinary piece of kit. What that means is, really, to me, is that when you kind of squeeze it, you can get more out of it. You know, that last bit of lemon that's left in the lemon juice, and you go back and you squeeze it again, you can get some more out. What AI does is it makes it very efficient. It makes the grid very efficient. Mm. It makes sure it squeezes every bit of juice out of it and that the energy is being used really well and being sent well and stored well. Before, a lot of our efficiency was lost in the transmission. Think how far our energy travels across poles, across wires, before it gets to its end destination. It can travel 10, 20, 30, 50 kilometres more, and so can our water, so can gas through the pipes. The leakage in those things is sometimes as high as 60%.
Crazy.
In other words, it loses that energy from its base, where it started, to by the time it gets to my plug to plug in my toaster. It's lost about 60% of the juice it started with.
Right.
AI-driven power ensures that it doesn't lose that 60%. It loses as little as possible along the way by looking at every single millimetre, literally, that travels and what it travels on and through, and updating that and changing that and recommending that. So it looks at every angle and makes sure that we're really getting full value out of it.
Well, let's do something that brings it slightly closer to home. Why can't my battery last longer? Well, even I've read about solid-state batteries. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so something's been talked... I mean, solid-state batteries, again, have been something that's been around forever and ever, and you're absolutely right. We all hoped they would last longer. I remember them coming out. The first time I remember them as a marketing tool... maybe it's an Australian thing, but it was very much on the Japanese radios that we bought, the wireless that we bought. They all came with solid-state batteries, meaning that it would last for a long time. Same sort of comment as the one before with the AI-driven things. We are now at a much better understanding of what it means to store energy, how we store energy, how it contains energy. And these solid states are not only being used for wireless, but now we're also beginning to use them for vehicles because all of our electrical vehicles, of course, store energy. They bring energy into the vehicle. And
there are so many now that people have, you know, where can I charge it?
Exactly. And renewable energy storage is becoming a big thing. We have our Australian government has now put out, I think January it started, funding for people to have at-home batteries. So we have a lot of solar on our roofs, or they're trying to convince us to have solar energy on our roofs, panels. What happened up until very recently was if you didn't use it, you lost it because it was available then, and if it wasn't, then it wasn't, and at night it just never was because it wasn't out there. But what we could do for a long time was to store it, literally take it off our roof, put it in a big battery, and then tap into that battery any time of the day we need it. They were expensive, they were clumsy, they were difficult to use, and they weren't all that good. All of those things are less true now than they were before, and our solid-state batteries really talk to that we can now bring energy in from multiple sources and store them locally. And that's a big thing now, inside of our car, inside of our home, inside of whatever it is we're using, store it locally and then use it. And in some cases, if it's big enough, actually share that back out into the grid.
So by the end of this year, of all the things you've talked about today, the probability is that so-called emotion-sensitive AI will notice that.
I think it'll be the opposite. I think it'll be so ordinary that we won't notice it. But yes, it will be obvious, and it will be every day. And that's tautology. But that's how far I think it will go. It'll just be part of our everyday occurrences.
Brilliant, Maurice. Thanks very much. Anything cooking on your website these few days?
There's some great articles there, as always. It's morrisfuturist.com.
Nice one. I will catch up with you in 2 weeks' time, because we've got Lunar New Year'sville next week, and Uncle James will be sitting in.
Happy New Year. I'll catch you in a couple. Have a great Tuesday.
Take care, Morris. Thank you, as always. That's Morris Misalowski, live from St Kilda in Melbourne, in Aussie. Let's check out...